Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm looking at my clock. It's 11, 11, 11. This is like the countdown clock, you know, if you're supposed to be hitting the news at right on the mark. I think that's a good thing. 11, 11, 11. That's a good sign. It's March. The wind has blown it in, and maybe the lambs will carry it out. I don't. We'll find out. Thanks for tuning in. Wendy's Coffee House Blogspot. You can check out all the recent stuff. Had a lot of reaction. Good response with the Board Camp Crystal Mine. People are curious about that. And this is really, it's fascinating. I do plan to go. I want to go check it out and give you a report after. But it's one of those things that I just happened to stumble upon. And they have online, you can look at their YouTube channel to look at the rocks. And this is with a game camera. They have one that was levitating. And they've seen these lights. And I mean, if you heard the interview, then you'll know that when I spoke with them, they're just completely, they're still kind of in awe of the whole thing. And after a friend said, well, MUFON, they could come investigate for you. And so they did that. And the funny thing about this was, and I added on the blog afterwards, after the show, we were talking about the electrical anomalies. And this is something I've experienced, you know, for two or three decades. Their main line, the hard line, the phone, was out of order right after we completed the interview. And I've done this show for online internet radio for, oh gosh, maybe it's been 8 or 10 years. Anyway, somewhere. And every time we talk about electrical anomalies, the producer there will go, Wendy, shh, don't do it, because the show will mess up. So that's part of it. But that is typical of this kind of activity. And they say they have a high registration or whatever. I don't know how they measure it of electromagnetic energy there. And I'm kind of wondering what else that affects, but it does affect their electronics. And this was the first time she said that they'd had the phone just completely go offline. His cell phone does out at the site, but they hadn't had the actual hardline office phone leave. So I feel like talking about them like in The Matrix or something. Anyway, just an update on that. And they are doing the tours now, daytime, nighttime, Board Camp Mine down in Arkansas. And you can pick up some crystals while you're there. So road trip. And that show is going to be rebroadcast. And you can check it out on the podcast in the archives. All right. The stuff this week, incredible. Just a lot of stuff. And Stephen Hawking, 76. You know, when they told, I think it was 21. Now, all right, you can Google and make sure all the facts are correct. But I'm going to ballpark it. When he was 21, I believe that was when he was told that they gave him 2 years to live. 76. I think he outlasted. I think he was absolutely phenomenal. And I love his outlook, except he said he didn't think there was an afterlife. Okay, well, I'm sure he's finding out differently now. For him, it's going to be fantastic, because he wasn't over-guesstimating, I should say. And now he's going to find out up close and personal what's really going on with those black holes. because, you know, maybe somebody will talk to him afterwards and find out. Anyway, but that was one of the highlights of the week, that he is such an extraordinary individual and he will be missed. But he left us with some fun things to continue exploring and some new things to check out on. One of his things I love, because it's the way I view things, is, you know, stay curious. Whatever you're doing, you know, don't check out, check in and stay curious. And he's somebody who epitomizes that, because with all the hardship that he had to overcome, then this would, you know, say, well, okay, it's over. Not that guy. The other thing that William Shatner would like you to know is the Earth is not flat. Quit using his image and saying that it is, okay? The flat earthers apparently are getting his getting his goat. He's like, I'm done. The British Flat Earth Association tweeted an image depicting Shatner's face along with a quote, "I was fooled by science. The Earth is flat." Dated April 15th, 2017. It should have been April 1st. Anybody would have known. Anyway, the text, great to have the support from another leading figure in society. And he's like, hello, excuse me, remove it. He comes to Kansas City every now and then for the horse shows. Anyway, I actually had my picture taken with him when he was doing one of the media tours. And at the moment that they click the camera, and he's very charming, he's really nice. I was like, oh, wow, William Shatner, yay. And he said something to me. And so I've got a profile, mostly a profile of both of us. I didn't have us in the picture. And it was, but it was him. the other things going on this week, there's just so many, phenomenal discoveries in science. I think there was one I pulled off, and of course I post most of these on the blog, Wendy's Coffee House, and one of them, the fourth dimension. They think that they do have, they've theoretically known that it is there, but trying to get the stuff and putting it in science and giving a description of what it actually looks like, they're really close. I thought that was cool. One of the cool things, I also found a theremin for rats. Have you ever heard of theremin? I wish, I don't have the music right now, but a theremin, it's really difficult for most people. It's a talent. It's a really cool thing to play. And this guy came up with a way to have the rats do it. He said, and it's rat film, feature-length meditation on the history of racial segregation in Baltimore. So not quite what you would think. But in the movie, the rats provide a lens, and they have just everything from zoning to pest control and that. But it's just an anomaly, an enigma, and a really interesting way of looking at things. And he said he doesn't want to be known as the rat guy, so he's going to. That's it. And my guest is going to be talking about, I think this is, I've talked to him before. This is, he can go two or three different ways. This is a second book on this. And Robert Kopecky is his background. I should probably let Robert tell you, but I'm going to give you an overview. He's been a little bit of a jack of all trades, and he's done work with animation designer. That's why he does the covers of his books. If you see the illustrations, the New York Times, PBS Kids, and he's had the thing that really is kind of a punctuation. He's got three of them, three near-death experiences. Robert, are you there?
I am here. Hi, Wendy.
Good morning, or good afternoon, morning. Or good evening, yeah. Whatever time somebody listens. Covering all the bases, you know. It's this for you, the background, and I saw that the newest book is also, you did the cover for the newest book, too. Now, this is the second book?
Yes, yeah.
All right, How to Get to Heaven Without Really Dying, which is really helpful. It's helpful.
Yeah, especially the last part, without really dying. That's the important part.
Oh, you tested that. Like, okay, was that like a slow, a learner's curve?
Yeah, do not have three near-death experiences. That's my main advice to your listeners. There are better ways to go about it, like I suggest in this book. They're fascinating and amazing experiences, but the circumstances of them are not particularly where you want to be.
Okay. You know? And then, see, that's the thing. The first book was more about the specifics, but since we're going to get everybody up to speed, I want to go ahead and get into some of that, too, and then we'll get into the second book. Because, okay, now that we've got this all covered and we're kind of, you know, balancing out, then we discover what would be helpful if we're planning on sticking around for a while. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
Real quickly, what would you tell Steven Spielberg since he's on his way?
What would I tell him?
Yeah.
Since he's... since he's on his way to the other
to heaven.
Side, is that?
Yeah,
oh,
uh-huh, yeah.
He's going to have a lot of fun arranging all kinds of fabulous things there because all bets are off. He won't have the constraints of a normal film crew anymore. He'll be able to assemble all kinds of new realities.
See, that's the cool part about this. Once you've had a near-death experience, then reality here shifts. Okay, so what we'll be talking about, again, my guest, Robert Kopecky, and the newest book is How to Get to Heaven Without Really Dying, and you can check him out. He's got a blog, too, Art, Faith, and Coco the Lion.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, robertkopeckyblogspot.com.
All right. So we're going to come back and we'll talk with Robert Kopecky and get the details of what had happened for those three times when he got the up-close-and-personal school of hard knocks on how not to die, but to get a glimpse of heaven. Next on Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your time. Hope you're having a good day, night, morning, lunchtime, evening. You know, when you do this and it's on the internet or it's in a podcast, you never know what time somebody tunes in. So I just figure it's always the right time, wherever you are, whatever's happening. This is a perfect time to tune in and catch what's going on with Robert Kopecky. If you haven't heard about him before, you might have seen some of his work. And that's the thing about that. You've had three chances to come back and get it right.
I have. I did not die each time, and therefore I am here to tell you about it.
Okay. So with that, the first one, what was going on in your life when the first one?
Oh, in the first one, I was a successful illustrator, art director, and art school teacher in Los Angeles. This was in about the mid-'80s or so. It was a single car accident. I was driving by myself through an unfamiliar neighborhood at dusk and glanced off a strangely parked car while I was fussing with my broken cassette deck. That'll date me. And went into a telephone pole, and the very next instant, I found myself at the top of the telephone pole looking down on the scene of the crash. I could look over bushes and hedges into people's yards and see people coming out of their houses, turning on their porch lights and running out and hollering to call an ambulance. I saw the ambulance pull up. I saw them load me on into the ambulance. I tried to communicate with people, but they couldn't hear me. I suppose I was a ghost. I didn't feel alone. I felt as though there was somebody kind of behind me, sort of shepherding me. And I had this sense that all near-death experiencers report on of this weightless being enfolded into a field of expansive, illuminative love, you know, this kind of release from the bondage of the material self, so to speak. I was kind of shepherded through what it seemed to be a cloud bank of sorts and found myself in a very pastoral place, like a park or nature, having kind of an interview with an entity who I don't really recall exactly. I don't really recall the exact content of our conversation, but I do remember that it was important stuff that was being hashed out. And I came to in a hospital about 18 hours after the accident. And so that was my first one, which was an out-of-body experience, as it's called.
Mm-hmm.
The second one I had after I was living a riotous lifestyle, I'd traveled the world looking for spiritual fulfillment without realizing that's what I was doing. I came back to America and witnessed my wonderful aunt who had helped me in my childhood. I was at her deathbed, and it kind of threw me out of my tracks. I ended up living downtown Manhattan for years as a wild bohemian, kind of, you know, in a nocturnal lifestyle. And it all caught up to me one night. I fell out on the floor of my Chelsea apartment and could not feel myself from my neck down at all. I was completely paralyzed, and the room filled in with a brilliant white cloud. Once again, I was released from the sort of material aspect of life. I felt completely diaphanous and effervescent and, you know, unbounded, wrapped in love, kind of. And I felt again like I was with somebody or somebody was with me, and they pointed to the center of the cloud, and when I looked, it opened up into a kind of a screen where I had a life review. I had these scenes from my life, five or six of these kinds of cogent. It was not the greatest hits. It was not the highlights reel.
That's not fair.
It was.
Yeah, it's guilt tripping.
It were these moments where I should have been present in a way that I wasn't, I think. You know, they were kind of pivotal, sort of formative moments that I'd skated over and hadn't realized what was really happening in my life at the time. And I had maybe five or six of these. I get bits and pieces of the details that come back to me now, but I try not to elaborate years later on my experiences.
Okay, yeah, because that was going to be the question. That was going to be the question of, okay, so what one stood out?
Right, because human memory is by nature self-enhancing, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
We don't, we can't really trust it. So
yeah.
I've kind of tried to crystallize these events in my mind and tell them almost exactly the same way every time, just to keep, because they're already amazing enough. They're already, plenty amazing. The third one was my least favorite way to go, if one has such choices to make, unfortunately. But I was in a small town in Arizona. This was maybe 15 years after the first one, and it was Super Bowl Sunday, and I was in a public place talking on a payphone, which it still tells you how long ago it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was assaulted by what we called at the time skinheads, by a big skinhead kid, kind of a neo-Nazi sort of roughneck.
Mm-hmm.
I was dressed like I had just come from New York City, because I had just come from New York City, and I don't think he understood my look.
Yeah.
And so he assaulted me, and I talked him out of it, but then he came back and assaulted me again, and I made a terrible mistake. I punched him right on the chin and knocked him flat on his back, and all the people around me applauded because they'd seen this guy harassing me, and I decided I better make good my escape and jumped on my bicycle and headed home, and I didn't realize there was a van full of these guys. They drove up alongside of me and hit me across the back of the head with a tire iron or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into the sidewalk, and then they apparently stomped and kicked me for about an hour. And in that one, I was still kind of tied to that physical, that grim physical reality. I still had a sense of this kind of violence going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in a place that was, and less celestial, less heavenly, this place. It was kind of womb-like, or kind of closed in. I still had that sense of being enfolded into a sort of a loving matrix, you know. And I had entities around me, a number of entities around me, and they were all telling me that I couldn't stay, even though I wanted to. I was arguing. I wanted to stay.
Making your case.
I'd had it with that. You know, I did not really want to go back and for stomping and kicking.
Yeah.
And they insisted. And I recall in my memory, it's kind of like being picked up and pushed through a membrane of sorts that I kind of popped through, and when I did. I opened my eyes. I was on my back on the pavement in this small Arizona town with an emergency medical worker over me who said, "He's back." That ended up being a couple hours that I had been unconscious.
Wow.
So those were the three near-death experiences, each one of a different nature. The first one being an out-of-body experience, and the second one the life review, and the third one being forced back into life, all of which are motifs that repeat a lot, that you hear a lot with near-death experiencers.
Well, and the other thing that you hear about that I know is not in yours is the going to the light and having, like, the full life review. That didn't, the going to the light, you didn't go through a tunnel?
No, I got ripped off. They didn't no tunnel. I'm still waiting for that one, which I hope will be my next and hopefully my final.
Well, okay, yeah. Yeah, well,
I did experience intense illumination.
Mm-hmm.
That, so there was this sense of everything being kind of made of light, or being in a source, within a source of light, so to speak, except for the last one, which, like I said, was kind of terrestrial or kind of womb-like in a way.
A little earthy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, like being inside of a body, sort of. It really was. As I recall it, that's what it seemed like. You know?
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break here. Again, my guest, Robert Kopecky. Now, the first book, How to Survive Life and Death, and it's a guide for happiness in this world and beyond. Okay, so that's the first book, and you can see his illustrations on his website at Robert Kopecky, Blogspot, Robert or is it robertkopecky.com?
Yes.
Okay, so they go either way, either way.
Yeah, there's a website that's robertkopecky.com and Robert Kopecky Blogspot.
I like the blog because you're current on that. You keep refreshing it, so I like that.
Yeah, I write.
Yeah.
I post essays and stuff on that.
Okay, so but then the new book we're going to be talking about too is How to Get to Heaven Without Really Dying. But I want to come back and ask you a couple questions because with PMH Atwater, who talks about things that people experience once they've had a near death event in their lives, sometimes they come back with other gifts and other abilities. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about that to see if anything's changed. Like, do you have a funky effect on electricity? You know, that kind of thing. Are you okay with that?
I do seem to be okay with electricity, as long as I stay away from too much of it.
Oh, that's probably a good answer. Okay, all right. So if you're listening along and just taking notes, we're going to be coming back, and hopefully you aren't going to be having one of these experiences, because Bob has already tested the water, Robert has tested the water, and he's here to say, not yet, but just in case, you might want to clean up your act a tad, and kindness plays a really big factor in this. So kindness would be good, especially when the skinhead is coming up and you're going to punch him back, say, no, not this time. Okay, stick around. Wendy's Coffee House on KCMO Talk Radio, back in a few. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. You know, some things happen, and you realize, especially if it's an out-of-body or near-death, that reality is a whole lot different. A whole lot different. And it's more, I guess it has more depth, more dimension, more realms, more unknowns, even more unknowns. And so Robert Kopecky had a near-death experience, 1, 2, 3, yeah, times 3. And each one was unique and different. And each time he got to come back and say, well, I guess I'm still here. I'm still here. Now, the last time I was like, you've got this guy, they punched you and he's beaten you up and he's bullied you, and you go back with a punch. I'm thinking, would you have done that differently, knowing? I mean, would you, because I just, was the near death that you'd already been there, done that, you weren't afraid, and you thought, what have I got to lose? I was questioning when you did that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I could see this not ending well.
Yeah, no, I had kind of suppressed my former near-death experiences because I didn't have a community. I didn't know who to talk to about it. When I talked to people, they just looked at me funny, so I had kind of suppressed all of that. At the time, it was just bad judgment, and yes, I would do it completely differently now, and I know how to do it now. I know a way to bring the proper energy into a situation like that where, you know, violence is reflected back to you. The world reflects back to you what you project into it. Just, you know, naturally. So, yeah, I would not punch the guy now. That was a bad mistake.
Yeah. Well, and that part, that's why I wanted to get into that, too, is because with the near-death experiences, each one was unique, and that one, that was really intense. So when you're talking about surviving what you did, undergoing, you know, being brutally beaten, and then still coming back and saying, okay, I've done it. That's what's going to happen if it keeps elevating and escalating to this. I think I've earned my earned my time in heaven.
Yeah.
When you're writing the book now, you have a whole different perspective than when you first came out with How to Survive Life and Death, and you've added on to it.
Yeah, because I became part of a community of near-death experiencers that I didn't even know existed, really, and so I've heard lots and lots of stories and been to events and read many people's testimonies and stuff. And the thing that stands out to me comes from my three experiences all being different, too, and that is, what accounts for the differences? We have a lot of things in common with one another in our stories, but near-death experiences do seem to be very custom-made, and mine were quite custom-made for the parts of my life that I was in at the time, you know, the perspective, the presence, and the purpose, I call it, the three lessons that I learned. And if you look at near-death experiences, they're even culturally exclusive and religiously exclusive. So, you know, Hindus will have an experience of having the Akashic Record read to them, or Tibetan Buddhists will enter into the bardos, which are these in-between life realms that are surrealistic and lead to their rebirth. And Christians will often meet Jesus or meet God or see winged angels, you know. So we're carrying some kind of data, some kind of, you know, I don't know exactly, quantum data maybe, some kind of pattern recognition, either into our experience of the potential of the next world or, you know, back to the way that we can report it as humans. So to me, it became very fascinating what my three near-death experiences meant. And it was pretty easy to understand the first one, because when you have looked down on your own body, that is life appears to be lifeless, it's very hard to get the genie back into the bottle after that.
Yeah.
And so that gave me this kind of understanding that we are these, you know, effervescent energy beings riding around in these material vehicles. Unfortunately, they break down.
Fall apart. Yeah, right. They're temporary.
After I finally had kind of an ego death years later, and all of these experiences kind of crystallized for me in a meditative practice, which was some years later that it really all came true in my life for me, I realize now that I have that perspective where I'm able to witness people as spirits channeling through the physical circumstances of their life, you know, that everybody is interpreting this world by means of their human filter, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, you only have the feelings that humans have and the experiences humans have and the language to express it that humans have. And so if you see somebody who's suffering or struggling and you feel like they're an antagonist in your life, they usually aren't being antagonistic towards you. They're just expressing that because they need to. And so there's a certain kind of compassionate detachment that one gets with that lesson of perspective I learned from the out-of-body experience. The second one where I saw these episodes, you know, these sort of interactive boxes of time where if I had been present for them, things might have been different in my life, that gave me what I call the gift of presence, which is this realization that everything happens now, you know, like Eckhart Tolle. The power of right now. We're always doing everything of importance in this eternal moment. You know, it hasn't changed that much my whole life, just, you know, the way that I interact with this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you can bring that awareness to bear in each moment, you can focus a kind of presence on what you're supposed to be doing, on what the signs are that are coming to you from the universe, on what people need you to do, on how you're affecting other people, how you can affect the greater circumstances. And so it's very empowering presence. It grounds you in this eternal moment and gives you a sense of a greater reality, too. And then the last one where the guys beat me up and I was forced back into this life because I hadn't done what I was supposed to do is pretty straightforward. I call that the gift of purpose. And the fact seems to be that each of us have kind of a mission to fulfill, whether it's completing ourselves karmically so that we can, you know, rejoin divine consciousness, or if it's to remove the obstacles to love in our life and show up for other people to complete ourselves spiritually. We all have a purpose that we're here for, shared, collective, and personal, I think.
Well, and I think, you know, in reviewing your book, your information, it seems like you're coming from you're more at peace, and there's less anxiety. There's a gentleness, there's a strength in that you're not overly concerned with appearances and what someone might, I guess, think of you. You don't worry about, I've had a near-death experience. This isn't reality that I'm, you know, I'm sharing with everybody else. It's mine. It's unique. It's okay, and I'm okay with that. I just see a lot more a sense of you being at peace.
Well, yeah. The most important death that I experienced wasn't any of those three experiences. It was a couple years after the last one when I experienced what you might call an ego death, where everything I thought I was supposed to be didn't work anymore. I didn't apparently have the career I thought I had. I obviously didn't have the wife that I thought I had. You know, I was not the person that I that I was supposed to be. It didn't work for me. And when I had that dark night of the soul, that ego death, all this other stuff started to come into a new reality for me. And I started to think about, when writing this book, about what that sense of heaven is, what's consistent for near-death experiencers. And it's a place that doesn't have ego or competition or aggression or desperation. You know, heaven is a really nice place in most people's minds, if you imagine your imagination, your imaginary heaven, the mm-hmm. way you picture it. It's a very, very nice place. So when you're bringing it, when you're aligning yourself spiritually with what heaven can be, there are these principles. It's a really nice place, and so kindness, like you mentioned before, is the chief principle that you can enact in your life that will align you with that, the sensibilities of heaven, so to speak.
Okay, hang on. We're going to take a quick break here. Again, my guest, Robert Kopecky, and you can check him out. The website, robertkopecky.com, and he's also got the blog, and everything on the main site, the main robertkopecky.com, shows you the books. You can connect to all where appearances and all that. But we're going to come back. I want to ask, you set it up with, okay, what was different? The relationships when you knew you had a purpose and that was your life was going to play out differently. I want to start with that when we come back after the break, okay? All right. This is Robert Kopecky, and this is Wendy's Coffee House on KCMO Talk Radio. In awesome. Hey, yeah, yeah. Hey, yeah. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Thank you for listening. Yeah, there's a whole lot going on. And sometimes life happens so fast, and you're so distracted or so overwhelmed or so pressured that you miss the really, really important parts. And it's amazing how each and every person has something that is significant, that matters. And in retrospect, it's like, if I had more time, that's what I would have done. And so right now, when you're listening to Robert, you've got an opportunity to go back and say, what would this one spot in my life, this one thing that happened, this one golden moment, what would I do if I could go back and bring that out or put more of myself into it? And that's why I wanted to bring you back and talk about that. I mean, the things that capture our attention, the famous people who blink in and blink out through our lives, like when I opened and talked about Stephen Hawking. And I know they just dropped the film, the preview for the next Harry Potter Fantastic Beast film. I think the Grindelwald change where they're doing battle against good and evil. All this stuff is happening. And yet the real thing's happening, like you go home for dinner and the cat's there, the dog's there, somebody wants your attention, the phone's ringing. And where do you focus? You came back with a purpose. How did that change your life?
Well, the purpose, I realize, is who I am, what I can do, what people want me to do, who I have in my life to show up for, following the sort of direction that love is leading me in, and the kinds of relationships that I can make to sort of complete myself and others, and how to take part in this world in a responsible way in order to make it a better place for everybody. I think that's kind of everyone's purpose. But in your example of coming home and having, you know, a dinner to be cooked and the cat's there, and all of it happens in this moment. And so how you can change that opportunity that you missed a long time ago is to be present for right now, right? Is to be living in this moment with that kind of focused presence as much as you can possibly manage at any given time.
And there's a siren going in the background like, this is really important, pay attention.
Yes, my ride is on its way here. It's getting picked up in a minute. I live kind of close to Kings County Hospital, so the windows open a little bit here in Brooklyn, New York City.
Oh.
And so you can hear sirens.
Yeah, the ambiance.
At any time of the day.
the ambiance, yeah.
Right.
Did you guys get snow, or is it, what's the...
We did yesterday, yeah. It's bright and sunny, but cold here today, and it's supposed to snow again one more time, at least, until we're into spring.
Yeah, you're into...
We're all looking forward to.
Yeah, we keep hearing, we're in the Midwest, so we keep hearing about the nor'easters. It keeps pounding.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
They're lining up. Yeah.
Well, that's where Robert is right now, so wish him well.
And there's heaven in Brooklyn. Heaven is every place, and this is kind of my point, you know, is that we all have experienced these moments that we can identify with our idea of heaven, where we just feel a transcendent sense of total connectedness and innate understanding of our shared purpose. They're kind of an expansion into illuminative love, you know, when you see your child accomplish something that's wonderful, or you have a fantastic meal with wonderful friends, that kind of thing, or you see a beautiful scene in nature. That heaven is available to us, and there are certain practices that we can engage in that increase it occurring more and more in our lives.
Well, whenever I see your significant other, you guys glow. And I think the dynamic that you bring now to your relationships is part of this being present. And, you know, compassion, the empathy, the things that you write about in your book, the newest one, that has a lot to do with it. Is this is a different person. This is somebody who's gone back and taken time to say, what was this all about?
Yeah, there really is a completion in the presence section in the new book, the second section. I go into some ancient texts, including the Bhagavad Gita, the Dhammapada, the Gospel of Thomas, and the poetry of Rumi in particular.
With
Coleman Barks gave me translations to use for the book, so that I'm very grateful to him. But Rumi was a Sufi, and the Sufis have this wonderful belief that we are alive in this life to sort of find the other, to find the friend that unites us in the beloved, you know, that we become whole in the spirit of God, so to speak, through this other person or through our relations in life. That's where the beautiful meditation of the whirling dervish came from, was when Rumi lost his dear friend, he started circling and spontaneously reciting poetry, and that's where that beautiful meditation came from. So,
well, there's one on
the
blog.
We're a paranormal couple. we complete each other in that sense, I think.
I was going to say, there's a piece on the blog that the ocean pours through a jar, and you might say it swims inside the fish. This mystery gives peace to your longing and makes the road home become home. And
yeah.
I thought, that's so beautiful. That's what you're doing. You know, that's the essence.
Yeah, and we are, and it speaks about exactly what I'm talking about in terms of our spiritual perspective, that we are vessels through which divine consciousness pours and is expressed through our filter. You know, we are the filter for divine consciousness into the world. You see some people that you understand it exactly because they are pouring divine consciousness through themselves all the time, and you see other people, and you can see the obstructions and the difficulties that they're having, and so we need to be present with this kind of compassion that we can identify with their troubles and their struggles, and that makes all of life, like you were saying earlier, it makes it all a lot easier, because we really understand what one another is going through. In a way, we are one another.
Well, okay, now, we're not going to say you could have prevented what happened earlier, but the last near-death experience, and you said, I know how to handle that better now, or maybe you said differently now. What mm-hmm. would you do? I've got 2 minutes, so it's just set. Where would you come from if this event were to reappear?
Well, I would, and I know how this works because I've had these things happen to me in some of my service work. When somebody is aggressive and like that and in your face, you can actually stand your ground, open your heart, and project a willingness to be there for them in a way that has, with humility and forgiveness and compassion and this kind of honest relationship to yourself and to them, it creates an energy, a kind of an energy field in that moment, where I've had people who were almost threatening to kill me break down into tears and want to give me a hug.
It's like
magic, you know?
Okay, well, and that's what I thought, you know, and again, we're looking at a minute and a half here. But I really appreciate what you're doing. I know the first book I thought was really fun, and this one takes it to a different level of saying, okay, this is reality, and this is what I've learned, and this is what we bring to the present, this moment of being here now, and really appreciating the heck out of it. So,
yeah, the basis of this, the first one was Woody Allen's I'm Not Afraid to Die, I Just Don't Want to Be There When It Happens.
Yeah.
And this one is from the Gospel of Thomas. The kingdom of heaven is spread across the earth, but men don't have eyes to see it. The goal is to give us the eyes to see it.
Excellent, excellent. So if you're listening and you want to check it out, do the Blogspot, Robert Kopecky Blogspot, or Robert Kopecky. I should spell that, shouldn't I? K-O-P-E-K-K-Y. P-E-C-K-Y. Okay. You can Google. If you spell it wrong, they'll fix it for you. I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you very much, Wendy. It's been a great pleasure talking with you again.
And the book, How to Get to Heaven Without Really Dying. Okay. This is your testimonial. Robert, he's here. He's been back. Been there, done that. Probably not going to do it again soon. Thank you. Thanks for listening. Check out the details. I'll put some links on the blog spot so you can get caught up with all the cool paranormal, spooky, unexplained that's happening. There was a UFO thing this week. Again, I just don't have time for all this stuff. Okay? All right. Well, so stay curious. Until next time, keep it positive. See ya.